In this episode, I'm in conversation with Pete Vesey. Hello and welcome to another episode of the QI Guy in Conversation With. I hope you are doing well. As you're listening to this, I'm sure you perhaps are on your commute or maybe a little lunchtime walk. Or you might even be listening to this as part of a podcast group, similar to a book group. Maybe you're with some friends and you're listening to this podcast. Heavens knows why, but perhaps that's what you're doing. It's been busy here at the QI Guy headquarters, very busy in the day job, designing a new foundation quality improvement training offer within my organisation. And as you listen to this, I think we'll be about a week from beginning our first cohort. So that's been gobbling up a lot of time, getting the admin and the slides and all the different things that we have to consider now that we're doing so much of our training, our engagement in a kind of a hybrid way with Zoom or Teams and in person. So it's generating some additional work, and for many of you it would be the first time doing these types of things, I'm sure, after the pandemic. Anyway, enough about me, and I'll maybe give you a wee update actually on how that QI training is going over the next few weeks. But let's crack on with the episode today. I put out a bit of a call on Twitter. Some of you may remember a few weeks, months ago, saying, who should I speak to? You know, who would be interested in coming on the podcast and having a chat? You know, this is not an exclusive club. We're not talking to certain people, or you don't have to fit a certain criteria. If you've got a story around QI and you're doing something interesting that you would like to shout about, or you think people would benefit from knowing, get in touch and come on the podcast. But anyway, I put out a call on Twitter asking, and I got a few volunteers, believe it or not. So the next couple of episodes are going to be in conversation with the people that reached out to me. And the first one was Pete Vesey, who is an occupational therapist, second OT in this batch of episodes. They're coming out with QI Woodwork. And he has kind of transitioned from his OT role into a kind of quality improvement lead role, working within the quality improvement team in his organisation. And he's also leading some quality improvement work with the Royal College of Occupational Therapists. And what was really interesting is when he reached out, he spoke to me a lot about sustainability and started to dig into that. And that's an area that's probably on the kind of horizon for a lot of people. They're maybe not necessarily involved in that, but you know, it's really important that we think about quality services and what quality looks like for our organisation, our staff, people kind of engaging and receiving our services. That it's not only, you know, that safe, effective bit that we all know so well, but actually it's now sustainable. And there's a real imperative to think about how we do all of the work within health and social care in a sustainable way going forward, for both not only the environment, but in a kind of clinically sustainable way as well, which is perhaps a different way of looking at it. So as always, there'll be info about Pete in the show notes and links to some of the pieces of work and the documents that we reference. But I had a great conversation with Pete, so without further ado, here it is. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Pete Vesey, who is one of a few people that I'm going to speak to in this batch of episodes who responded to a call on Twitter, because my Rolodex was running thin, and I thought, who else can I speak to? So I put it out there on Twitter, and Pete came back and sounded very interesting, and a topic I think we're going to touch on that's kind of new to a lot of people, perhaps within quality improvement as well. So Pete, welcome. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. And yeah, it's nice to have the opportunity been following you on Twitter and listening to a few podcasts for a while. So when I saw your tweet, I thought, who am I? But why not?
Exactly, because we've all got experience, we've all got a story, and this is really just a kind of, a vehicle for sharing that and letting people know they're not alone, perhaps, in this world of quality improvement. So we're going to talk about QI, but your background is as an occupational therapist.
That's
So
right.
how did you get into occupational therapy? It's not something I can recall at Careers Day at school, someone saying, have you ever thought of being an occupational therapist? So I mean, how did that come up in your life?
No, absolutely. I think I was about 26 when I first heard of it. I'd never heard of it before. I was working in a investment bank at the time, so very far removed. So what inspired me, a friend of my wife's came to stay and she was an occupational therapist and I'd never heard of it, but it just so happened the year before we got married, I was volunteering and befriended a housebound neighbour and used to do a bit of shopping for her and was increasingly frustrated at seeing how she was struggling in practical ways around her home. And I remember thinking there must be things to help, who can help? And then when I met this OT, and she was a social services OT, so working very much in that area, it was a bit of a light bulb moment. I thought, wow, that's hit the nail on the head. That's what I want to do.
Fantastic. And it's such a kind of shared narrative. Lots of people, I think, who work in health and care have that kind of that narrative or story that kind of inspired them to join. And even working in the NHS for a long time, as I have been, I often wondered what an OT did. And I didn't really actually fully grasp until I had an OT who was helping me recover after surgery, and I was thinking, this is actually really, really valuable. And it was all OT follow-up rather than kind of nursing and medical, which I think just shows the value that they have in terms of helping people kind of rehab and get back into things after anything, I suppose. So QI, I'm always keen to understand clinical people in particular, their journey into QI. What was it that kind of maybe inspired them? Were they voluntold to get involved in something, or did they kind of voluntarily themselves jump into it? So, I mean, for yourself, because you're in a QI role just now, and you can maybe say a wee bit about that, but how did you transition into quality improvement?
I think potentially training as an OT in as a mature student, coming into the workplace, particularly after having worked for a couple of years on rotations, I joined a new service, relatively new service, condition management program, working in partnership with the Job Centre Plus at the time. And I guess that was the first of at least a couple of services that I've sort of worked in my career that were kind of new and fledgling, and that kind of really seeded my appetite, I suppose, and my interest in being innovative, and having a not quite a blank sheet, but we've got the remit here to shape this as we go. But also working in teams where they were quite forward thinking and sort of encouraged that. And certainly in my final clinical position before I joined the quality improvement team, I was working 5 years as part of a community pain management service. And within that, I took on the role of leading the patient volunteer program. And I guess that was my kind of first real experience of having sort of ownership of something to build and develop. And it really, I kind of came to a crossroads where I thought, I can either progress further and become focus on sort of clinical specialism in pain management, or go down this road of really focusing on service improvement. And that's when the position came up with the quality improvement team, which was new at the time to our organization. And and it it was joining the team, just it felt like, again, a bit of just everything coming together in the right way at the right time. It was very inspiring. And I realized the more I found out about it when I first joined, how I'd been going about improvement the wrong way, or not the best way. I realized all the things that I thought, yeah, I should have done it that way.
I think that happens to all of us actually when it comes to improvement, and as our journey goes along, we're never quite sure of what we're doing and how we're doing it. We always have those light bulb moments. We go, God, I don't know if I want to own up to. Used to do it like that. Having worked in improvement for a long time, Pete, I would say that probably never actually goes away.
No.
You always meet somebody who's got a better grasp on something than you have, or who can teach you something new. And I think the great thing about working in a kind of a team or an organisation that has a kind of QI improvement, as part of its culture, is you're always open to that, and you're always going to develop and grow and learn. And I think that's one of the great things. So you joined the QI team, as you said, and you're becoming a QI lead. And one of the things you've been leading over the last 6 months, I'm really interested to know more about, is this kind of QI leaders and influencers collaborative, which sounds really interesting, because when a lot of people kind of are leading collaboratives, it's around about a kind of a clinical problem. Let's fix this thing, falls or sepsis, or they're focused on it on that. This sounds like it's maybe something different. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yes, I mean, I think it's not unusual within organizations maybe for there to be QI coaches or kind of people that have gone through specific or further training levels in quality improvement within the organization, who then become those kind of key leaders and influencers for QI in their areas of work. I guess the way that QI has evolved in our organization is that from the start of our team, it's been very focused on frontline-led change. So we've been we had our kind of 5-year plan was to spread and embed improvement thinking and improvement tools throughout the organization. And it was very much just building interest, coming alongside teams and staff, getting ourselves known, working with the willing. And I think we reached a point, particularly through the pandemic, of I guess realizing where when you have to respond quickly to sudden change as an organization, I think it sort of highlights where maybe we're not working in as joined up a way as we would like to. And I think it sort of highlighted where there is strategic steer and reviews going on that maybe aren't connecting up with the learning and intelligence that's coming through staff-led change and patient experience. So I think that alongside, I guess, as things change with the team, we're sort of realizing more and more that you reach a point where we're a small team, there's only so much we can do. I guess that was the tipping point, really, a couple of years ago, saying actually, also, I suppose the third element was recognizing that with the training that we'd been doing, but also people coming into the organization from elsewhere who brought their own expertise and experience of QI, just acknowledging that there was a lot of expertise in the organization, but we're not necessarily working together. So yeah, so the idea of the collaborative really is about connecting those people who are demonstrating enthusiasm and improvement, interest in improvement, showing some leadership through their example, but also people that have good experience and sort of training in quality improvement. And just like the way our team has grown in its role and QI's grown in the organization, I think with the collaborative, we're starting very organically. So it's about bringing those initial people together and not, rather than setting a bar where we're saying you've got to be at this level of training and experience to join, it's more about, right, we're all enthusiastic about spreading QI and improvement thinking and use of tools and approaches. Let's start where we're at and let's work together to kind of build up our confidence. So we're asking people to work towards a certain level of training within our system. ICS endorse it, where we're following the CUSA model of quality service improvement and redesign for QI training. So we're asking people to kind of work towards the CUSA practitioner level, but very much, you know, at the pace that they're able to.
Yes, it sounds fantastic. A really good approach. I think the kind of the socialization element of team members around kind of, you know, quality and particular leadership and influence, and it's really important. And that sounds like a really great way to get behind that. There's lots of focus on the technical tools, you know, when it comes to training and model for improvement, PDSA and driver diagrams and all this kind of stuff. But actually, you probably need fewer people who are experts in that and more people who are just kind of bought into the mindset and can help drive it forward in that kind of leadership and influence and position. Sounds really great. I love the fact that you're kind of recognizing that maybe disjointed element of kind of how we do quality improvement and support that in the organization as well. So that sounds really, really, really helpful. So I kind of alluded to it earlier, kind of the new or the different element. So as part of your kind of working week, you spend a day a week working with the Royal College of Occupational Therapists, and you're kind of focused on quite an interesting project, which I think you know might now be in more people's kind of agenda or certainly on the horizon, which is about sustainability. And we have, you know, we have the six dimensions of quality that we kind of, you know, measure ourselves against: safety, effective, person-centered, all that kind of stuff. I think sustainable should be the seventh domain of quality, because I think where we're doing all of that thing, as we move forward with the kind of the climate imperative, we should be making that sustainable. So you're working with members of the Occupational Therapy Royal College and using the SUSQI model from the Centre for Sustainable Healthcare. Could you tell us a wee bit more about what you're doing and what you're hoping to achieve around about that? Because I think it sounds fantastic.
So the work that I'm doing 1 day a week, it's on a fixed contract with the Royal College of Occupational Therapists, is focusing on their the strand, the member focused strand of their current sort of sustainability action plan, which is really about supporting members to embed and work in increasingly sustainable ways in practice. And I guess it is a growing agenda, and obviously we've just had Earth Day on Saturday, and actually as we're recording, it's the final day of NHS England's first ever Greener AHP Week. So there's been quite a lot going on in the last week, and so OTs are amongst a number of AHP groups that are, or professions, sorry, that are really getting behind this. And certainly the Chief Sustainability Officer is so Nick Watts, running a a fellowship scheme. So there are a number of AHPs who've been successful in becoming clinical fellows on his fellowship for the last couple of years. And our Chief Allied Health Professions Officer, Susan Rastrick, is really behind this as well. And it's a core part of the new AHP strategy in England as well. So, yeah, so there's a lot of movement in this. And I think the Centre for Sustainable Healthcare have been doing amazing work in this for, you know, more than a decade. And what's interesting is that they were doing work around how do we kind of frame and plan and put sort of steps in place for working in a more sustainable way, measuring the impact, planning changes, and realized that a lot of the thinking was in line with quality improvement. So
absolutely.
they brought those two things together to create, I suppose, or demonstrate a model that they call SUSQI, which is Sustainable Quality Improvement, which is really focused around what they call the triple bottom line. So that's kind of a measurement equation that they're recognizing that when, and linking in with what you were saying about the domains of quality, that, you know, quality in itself isn't enough, in if that we might be providing a really excellent quality service, but are we providing it equally to everyone? Are we meeting the kind of, is our service providing the real needs of our population? So the triple bottom line looks at the environmental impact and kind of values of what we're doing, but also the social or population, patient, staff aspects, as well as the financial. So it's really valuable seeing how those three have equal weight and come together.
Yes, it's really interesting, and I have to say I'm just fairly new to the sustainable. I mean, that sounds kind of, you know, because we do lots of things in our private lives to be sustainable and all that kind of stuff, recycling and different things. But from a work point of view, it's never really been something that's been on my horizon. But certainly in the last 6 months, it's been a big kind of drive in my work. Are there any particular kind of work streams that you're looking at within the kind of sustainable stuff within the occupational therapist work? I know that some areas are looking at, you know, reusables, you know, and how they can either kind of reduce or replace to more sustainable materials. They're looking at things like travel and how they might kind of reduce the travel and the car use within certain service models, etc., etc. So have you guys identified anything that you're working on? Are you still at that kind of broad strategy, this is something we want to do stage? Have you got any detail yet?
Yes, absolutely. So sort of the first part of my work up to Christmas last year was really sort of focusing on understanding where we're at in terms of what our members sort of, are expecting, what they know, what they think and what they need. And we ran a member survey for just over a month last autumn. And it really provided a lot of really useful feedback in terms of, I think, pretty much, you know, 95-96% of members agreed that this there is a role for the professional body to be playing in this, but also for OTs themselves. But then in terms of what we're actually doing in practice, what we're able to do, not really meeting that same level of agreement. And I think it gives us that mandate to say, you know, there's work to do here. Certainly I would say for occupational therapists alongside the other AHPs, the work that Greener AHP are doing under the Chief Allied Health Professions Office is recognizing that, and this really aligns up with the Centre for Sustainable Healthcare's principles of sustainability, that prevention and promotion of health and enablement of people to self-manage and to manage their own health are really key players in sustainability, because I guess there's that thread that we all understand that as a planet and as a people, we are consumers, and that's part of the problem, that we're so geared up to consuming and not so much on the reusing. And I think it's the same with services. If we're focusing on consuming services, health and social care services, then that's where the greatest level of impact on the environment is, really, through the delivery of those services. So if we're working better with communities, and with people groups and with the resources that we have naturally around us, then we're having that impact on reducing.
Yeah, that's it kind of touches on that concept of, NHS organisations being anchor organisations and certainly within the community and kind of driving some of what you've just described. Not just within a hospital building, but actually within the community and suppliers and providers and that circular kind of green economy. So yeah, it's really fascinating. I have to say that it kind of makes my head spin sometimes thinking about all the different variables and how you kind of try and reconcile all. I mean, I think SUSQI provides a really digestible framework for how you can approach that and the little equation that they have in terms of what they see as sustainable value, I think is a great way for describing it. And that environmental, social, financial impact, that triple bottom line, as you described it, I think it's really important that that's visible, because it's not often the types of things that we, particularly in healthcare, would use to measure how well we're doing, if we're doing the right things, if we're kind of achieving them. So it's yeah, it's probably a journey that we're on, but it's the first step of that is communication, isn't it? It's strategy. It's putting the kind of infrastructure in place to kind of make people aware of that and understand before we kind of move on to trying to get things done differently. But that's great work. So Pete, listen, thank you for having the chat with me. I'm sure that there's lots of people of particularly the discussion around sustainability have learned something, and people should definitely check out SUSQI. Thank you again for reaching out on Twitter. When we throw these things out into the kind of the digital sphere, and Twitter's not the best place at the minute, you always wonder if you're going to get a response back. So thank you very much for responding back, and it's been wonderful talking to you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you once again to Pete for reaching out and agreeing to come on and have a conversation with me. It's not as scary as it sounds, folks. Whenever I say, "Why don't you come on the podcast and have a chat with me?" lots of people are nervous, but we're having a conversation just like you would with a colleague in the office or in the canteen at lunchtime. There's nothing special here. And I can tell you there's no fancy bells and whistles to intimidate you. This is very, very low tech. So thanks again for listening. You know where to find us on Twitter. You can follow me at the QI underscore guy. I'm sure you know where to get the podcast. Hopefully you have been listening for a wee while now, but if not, and it's your first time, please go back into the archives and have a wee listen to some of the previous episodes. We're going to be pulling out and dusting some of those conversations off and revisiting them during this batch of episodes for folk that are maybe new to the podcast. But you can get us on Apple, you can get us on Spotify, you can get us on Google, you can get us in all the apps, wherever you get your podcast. So all that's left for me to do is thank you once again for listening in. I hope you enjoyed it, I hope it was useful, and until the next time, take care.